Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawk Talk Podcast. I am Pat Boyle. Coming up on this week's podcast, we go one-on-one with Scott Darling as he gets emotional when describing his memories with the Hawks. Plus, Tracy Myers and Charlie Romeliotis from CSNChicago.com joined us to discuss Richard Panik's extension and the Hawks at the World Championship, plus Alex DeBrincat's chances of making the big club next season. But first, can't get enough of Chicago sports. Visit Chicago's own Vivid Seats to receive 10% off Blackhawks tickets and all other sports, music, and entertainment. Go to vividseats.com/CSNshy. We kick things off on the Hawks Talk Podcast with former Blackhawks netminder, now Carolina Hurricane, Scott Darling. Scott, thank you for joining us. You knew this was going to be an exciting offseason, pretty much like a life-changing spring. But when you finally agreed to the contract with Carolina, did you reflect on the long journey it took to get to that spot?
Yeah, of course. It was it's been a long, winding road for me. And, you know, obviously I was pretty shocked and sad to hear that I was, you know, going to have a change of scenery. But, you know, once I thought about it and kind of processed everything, now I'm just super excited, and I'm really excited about the situation that I'm coming into, and to have a team commit to you like the way the Canes committed to me, it's a pretty good feeling.
Now, you know, we thought there might be just a slight chance that you would be able to stay here in Chicago. You know, we heard Stan obviously say, you know, changes were coming. Did you think there was a small chance that you might be staying with the Hawks?
I mean, we had talked about it, you know, I think they wanted that to happen, but it just couldn't work. So it's hard to have two guys who want to be starting goalies. So this is kind of just what needed to happen. It's unfortunate. Like I said, it's hard to leave Chicago. It's my home. My family's there. And so it's tough, but I'm excited for the opportunity that I'm getting now. So I'm just kind of focusing on that.
As for your family, you know, mom knew this was coming, but, you know, she had her son playing right here in his hometown. How did Cindy take the news? How'd your mom take the news?
Well, I mean, I kind of braced my family for it, you know. So she kind of had time. Obviously, we're all really shocked when it happened. And then to find out we're going, you know, moving to Carolina, you know, it's a little bit far from Chicago, but obviously, they're going to be able to come out and visit me whenever they can and see some games and, you know, hopefully get to play at the EC next year. It'll be weird to wear a different jersey, but, you know, everyone's really happy for me, obviously. They wish it was still the same. I was still in Chicago, but they're happy for me.
You've had a few weeks to decompress from the season. You know, with time to reflect on the Nashville series, what the heck happened in that first-round series from your vantage point?
You know, I've had a lot of people ask me that, and I still can't really put my thumb on it. I don't know if – well, first I want to say you got to give Nashville credit. Like, they played amazing. They're still playing amazing hockey. It'll be interesting to see if anybody can beat them this year. But for our standpoint, I don't know. We couldn't take that next step and hit that next gear to compete with the level that they were playing at, the intensity that they were playing at. And, you know, I think that's pretty much it.
You heard Stan say, you know, on that Saturday when you guys were doing your exit interviews that there were going to be changes. I mean, you know these guys well. You won a cup with them in 2015. Do you envision a major shakeup, or do you think there'll just be some minor tweaks? Do you have any gut feeling on that?
You know, I don't really know. That's not really my expertise with front office stuff. But obviously, you know, Stan's still committed to making the team as good as it can be. And we didn't have success the last 2 years. It doesn't matter what you do in a regular season. So he's going to do whatever it takes, whatever he thinks is best. You know, I was sad to see Kitch go. He was a great coach, and he was great to me for 3 years. And I hope, you know, he'll land on his feet somewhere because he's such a great coach. But, you know, we'll see what Stan does. I think he's great at what he does, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I'm sure every Hawks fan has their own mental snapshots of what they remember most about your time with the Blackhawks. Do you have, like, two or three, you know, those snapshots that you'll always remember from your time with the Blackhawks?
Yeah, let's see, off the top of my head, I'll never forget the view from the crease, my first game during the national anthem. That was a very special night for me. Obviously, winning the cup, skating around the ice with that over my head, that's a snapshot I'll keep forever. And I mean, I don't know if there are really any other times that are really going to stick out like those two did, but I'm going to take a lot of great memories and a lot of great friends, and the whole city was so great to me the whole time I was there, and all you guys in the media were so great to me. So I'm just going to have a lot of good memories.
You had a great relationship with Corey Crawford. Have you talked to Crow since the trade and the contract?
Yeah. Crow reached out to me right away. We've become really good friends over the years, and he was kind of like my mentor in the NHL and also a great friend. So he's really happy for me, and, you know, he's confident in me, and he wanted to let me know he's confident in me that I'm going to be able to do this. And he's just been awesome to me, and he's really happy for me.
You've also had a wingman off the ice, the beautiful fiance Martha. You guys got engaged during the season. Is the wedding still going to take place this summer, or have all these changes kind of thrown a wrinkle into that?
Well, it's pretty much put a wrinkle in everything, because now we have to pick up our life and move, and she has a great job in Chicago. So we're, like I said, this is all happening very quickly right now. It's been chaos the last couple weeks. So we're going to start working on the logistics of our own personal life off the ice as soon as we can.
Okay, anything you might splurge on with the new contract? Is there something that you're like, you know what, once I sign that deal, this might be something I would like to have. Do you have something you might want to splurge on?
I don't know. I mean, I've learned to live a pretty modest lifestyle the last couple of years. But, I mean, I'll probably buy a house in Raleigh, and after that there's really nothing. I mean, I might get a bigger TV so I can watch my movies, but that's probably about it.
That's awesome. Well, hey, we wish you the best of luck. It was amazing to see you start your NHL career here in your hometown. We wish you nothing but the best in Carolina. And tell your mom, Cindy, she can still watch CSN when she's not watching the Canes play, all right?
I'll definitely let her know, and thank you so much for being so great to me the last 3 years.
Scotty, it's our pleasure. Best of luck in Carolina, and we'll talk down the road, all right?
All right, thanks a lot.
Up next, we talk Richard Panik's extension and Alex DeBrincat's chances of making the Hawks next season.
After every Cubs game, stay tuned for Cubs Post Game Live, sponsored by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, with David Kaplan and David DeJesus. Hear from Cubs players inside the locker room. Get a live look inside Joe Maddon's post game press conferences and more.
Welcome back to the Hawks Talk Podcast with Tracy Myers and Charlie Romeliotis from CSNChicago.com. I am Pat Boyle. All right, guys, let's talk about the news that's happened since last week's podcast. Richard Panik getting the 2-year extension, obviously a comfortability factor between Panik and the captain, Jonathan Toews.
And he got very nicely rewarded for it. You knew he was going to get a raise, and he got a very nice one. And it sounds like this was the first deal that the Blackhawks offered him. He was cool with it. You know, there's no doubt. You look at what the Blackhawks got when they got Panik. I mean, I don't think any of us ever expected him to be the player that he was and to find that level with Jonathan Toews. You know, he wasn't happy with his postseason. I don't think anybody was. But he was the most consistent guy up there on that left wing for a team that was really struggling for the last year and a half to find someone. So, yeah, it's a very nice deal for him now to keep up with what he's been able to do at a much higher salary.
Your thoughts on Panic coming back. Do you think he solidified himself as one of the wingers for Taves?
I think he's going to start out there next season. I was a little bit surprised at the term, that it wasn't a little bit longer just to get the cap hit down. But I think Stan Bowman said it to the media that we're on the conference call. That's a priority, is getting Jonathan Taves that left winger, that consistent right winger who they're going to try to find this offseason. But consistency-wise, I think that still needs a little bit of work. But if you look at the production in a vacuum, like, I think he can nail down that spot next year.
You know, and I think, you know, his style of play is what you're looking for, playing a little bigger than he – I mean, he's already a big winger, has a little bit of edge to his game. I don't know if he has that playoff edge that we've talked about on – you know, again, you made the point. Nobody really had any edge in that brief four-game series against Nashville. So I think – the jury's still out if his game translates into the Stanley Cup playoffs game, which, as we're seeing, is a whole nother animal.
Well, and again, and we've talked about this before, you know, he's got the size and the strength to do it. It comes down to the will. And we've talked about this. It's not a matter of physically what you've got. If you've got that desire to go to the net, and he's certainly shown that in the regular season. You know, this was a confident guy through 82 games. And that's the thing, is, like you said, it needs a transition. He needs to realize, okay, if I do this through 82, don't put in my head that, okay, this is a different, even though it is a different stage, you have to play the same way. He has to bring that same energy and that same drive. And it's, I think it's more of a mental thing than anything else.
Nick Schmaltz got some time up on that left wing with Taves and Panic. Schmaltz and Trevor Van Riemsdyk are two of the Blackhawks that are over at the World Championships in Germany. Artemi Panarin playing for Russia. Let's talk about the U.S. They rallied three times to beat Russia on Tuesday. Jimmy Howard has, I think, found the fountain of youth a little bit here with a big save on a breakaway from Panarin. First off, your thoughts on seeing Panarin play and leading, you know, all skaters in scoring at the tournament after last week, or, you know, week and a half ago, he talked about the fatigue factor going into the playoffs.
Yeah, I guess I'm slightly surprised. Maybe it's being back with, familiar teammates. Maybe it's the bigger ice. They do have the bigger surface over there, if I'm not mistaken. I keep forgetting that across the pond. Outside of that shot that Jimmy Howard stopped today, he's played very well. Now, I know he missed one game earlier this week. He had an upper body injury and was out. But, yeah, it's hard to, you know, kind of put the same guy in the same places. You know, is this the guy who said that he was so tired? Because he certainly isn't looking it right now.
No.
Yeah, I mean, in the World Cup and I think the Olympics too, he was like a third liner for Russia because they had Ovechkin. They had all these guys, but none of them are there. Like, Ovechkin's not there. Some of the big name players aren't there. So he's like, I mean, he's logging heavy minutes there, and he's leading the tournament in scoring despite missing that one game. So I don't know. I think it was more like he got a few weeks to recharge, but
yeah, it's still, or lost in translation in the beginning. Like, that we didn't, that the way that came out is maybe
possible,
right?
Not what he intended.
He definitely looks like a different player now.
Yeah. I think it might have been like a comfortable interview, like a one-on-one interview with a Russian reporter, and he was just being honest that maybe he wasn't 100% in the playoffs physically.
It sounds like, you know, while the NHL says that they're not going to the Olympics, it looks like there's some last-ditch efforts here to, you know, get the NHLers. We know the players want to go.
Right.
I'm beginning to think they're going to find a way to get this done. Are we past the point of no returns? I mean, we got schedules that need to be made.
Right.
And that, you know, 2 to 3 week window is a major one.
Yeah, and I wondered not so much. I realize you can tell from talking to all these players, and we were in Colorado when this all came down, and from, you know, Duchesne to Taves, whoever you talk to that day, adamant that they wanted to go. The only concern I had was kind of like when they went to Russia, the time difference and the amount of travel involved and everything. It's different when it was in Salt Lake City or when it was in Vancouver. I wondered if that would be an issue. Apparently it's not. But, you know, that's another thing that they
I think it's a huge issue.
Yeah, you know, and so the fact that as many players still want to go, I understand the wanting to represent your country, but wow, you're going a hell of a long way to do it. And then you factor in an 82-game season. That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I'm optimistic that a deal still could get done is because they haven't even announced an All-Star game location yet, which I think there was a report today that went out that it's probably going to be Tampa Bay, but it's still not official from the league. So they're still working a schedule. I mean, they said earlier when they sent out the press release that they're going to move forward with a schedule, assuming that there's going to be an All-Star game. It's just there's going to be no Olympics, but they haven't come out and said it yet. So, there's reason to be optimistic there. And I think another concern was that by, I think it was like the latest by early June that they have to get this set because of hotels. And like the NHL is like, that's the most expensive that all these, the families, and that's, they're not going to have room.
No, exactly. And there's only so many 4 or 5 star hotels. And the NHL traveling party and all the teams will take up a good majority of that. So you can't have all those rooms set aside for this will they come, will they not, when they can go get top dollar from other people that are going to travel to the Olympics, you know, as fans and whatnot. So I think that's a big part of it. We'll see what happens down the road here. One other thing, one of our colleagues, Brian Hedger, over in Germany, spoke with Stan Bowman a little bit, and I don't think there was a direct quote from Stan, but the gist was the removal of Mike Kitchen was not a warning shot directed to Joel Quenneville, and that Joel will play a major role in deciding you know, who Kitchen's successor is, which we talked about. We thought it was going to be a group effort here to decide.
Right. Yeah, I think it was one of those deals, and again, I can't, I wasn't there talking to Stan or about this whole thing, but, you know, was it a situation of, okay, him thinking maybe Joel is too close to this and I need to kind of take over and make a decision here with the coaching staff? I'm not sure I totally agree. You know, these two have always found success in being selectively disagreeing on things. You know, there's always going to be a gap in there, but I wonder if this is too big of a gap in this case.
One part of this equation that I don't think we've talked about enough, and that from what my understanding is, it did play a major role in Kitchen's dismissal, was players. And during the exit interviews, where their comfortability factor had been with Kitchen, you know, Pat Riley wrote in a book that every coach has like a 6-7 year shelf life with a team, whether you win, lose, or you don't. And I think there might have been this third component. Everyone's like, well, there's the Quenneville camp, there's the Bowman camp, front office camp, and then there's, you know, we're not talking about the players. And I think that's something that, you know, is not going to be discussed, who said what, but that is did play a role in this.
Right. I don't think it was a warning shot directed at Quenneville, as in, hey, your job is on the line next season. I think it's more of, like you said, I think it's just more about complacency and, you know, just sending a message throughout the entire organization, players, coaches, that we're not going to be satisfied with how we went out this past season, especially in 4 games. They didn't even score, like, what, 2 goals, 3 goals. But so, I mean, it's not like Stan Bowman was making a shot to Joel Quenneville because he, you know, the last season was on him. Like, I mean, we could all argue that that was his best coaching job.
Sure. But, no, you know, I totally agree with you.
It's not like Quenneville couldn't have done more coaching-wise. I think it's just more about, you know,
and lineup-wise, what, okay, maybe Kempney could have gotten in a game earlier. Okay.
But that,
that's one, you know.
Yeah, he did very good with working parts and a lot of young guys. Yeah. And for those who still think that Quenneville has a problem with young guys, I think, listen, he realized that maybe it was part of it that he had to use them, but you could tell he put a lot of trust in a lot of those young guys.
Yeah, I think the thing that helped Joel gain trust was the fact that we didn't have this revolving door back to Rockford.
Right.
That they you know, pointed out 3, 4, 5, 6 guys to start the season. Like, hey, you're going to make mistakes up here. We're going to live with them.
Right.
You're not going to be back and forth with the easy pass to Rockford every time you make a turnover or what have you. And I think it allowed those guys to mature a little bit. Now, again, there were some times that guys went down, and it certainly paid off. Tanner Carroll comes to mind. But I think that, I want to say it forced Joel, but it gave everybody the opportunity, like, you know what, we're going to sink or swim with these guys for a while. And I think it got everybody on the same page.
Yeah, and it gives the young guys, too, that were up there, you know, because Joel gave them a long leash to begin with. So it gave the young guys confidence to, okay, I'm going to mess up a few times, but the coaches aren't going to, you know, this isn't going to make or break whether I go to Rockford or not. And he also, Joel Quenneville also, Gustav Forsling ended up making the team out of camp last year.
Right.
And that was, I mean, he was like a 19-year-old defenseman. That's way harder to get established in the NHL as a defenseman. So, I mean, Forsling almost solidified a spot all year.
Speaking of 19-year-olds, Alex DeBrincat, the OHL most outstanding player, the Erie Otters, mm-hmm. his team, they won it all. He's 5'7", 165. He's a right winger. But other than being a Red Wings fan when he's a kid, there's a lot to like about this guy. And I think there's a good shot that he makes the club next year.
Yeah, he's 19. He's going to be 19 through December. I seem to remember there is a way that he could stay, if not with the Hawks, with Rockford. I would have to double check on all that. But, you know, 3 years in the OHL. And we talked with him on that conference call not too long ago, and people asked why he wanted to go back for one more season at least, and it was more of a team thing for him. I mean, look at the numbers he's put up over the last couple of years, and also proved this year, hey, I don't need Connor McDavid and others on my side. I can still do this. But he wanted to come back and try to win that title, which he did. So the team-first mentality is great. He has things that he has to work on, but here's the thing. He's always going to be 5'7". He's always going to be a small guy. You know, he can get stronger, but, you know, if he can be this fantastic, great scoring, elusive guy, it's not going to matter how big or small he is.
Yeah, I spoke with Connor McDavid earlier in the year about DeBrincat specifically, and he honed in on DeBrincat's ability to – I think there was an instance where DeBrincat was on a shift and it was like a 6'2 defenseman, and he was the guy going to the dirty areas, and Connor said, you know, I'm not going there, like, you can do that. So it was just like, we talked about this on the last time the three of us were together, the podcast, of going to the dirty areas in front of the net. Like, he's 5'7" and he's doing that,
right?
You know,
right. It's not always the size, it's the willingness to do it.
Yeah.
And we saw it even in the Nashville series. Not the biggest player was the guy doing all the dirty work for the Preds.
Right, and he's not just, like, skating circles around everyone in the OHL. He's getting greasy goals there as well. So that gives him a leg up at training camp on the others.
Speaking of Nashville, the fact that they reached the Western Conference Finals, and as we tape this podcast, they're 1-1 with Anaheim. Does it soften the blow of the four-game sweep, or are you still looking at the fact that it was a sweep and you weren't really in too many games as still that lingering bad taste, and it doesn't matter how far the Preds go?
If the Preds end up winning it, kudos to them. There's no doubt that they were the better team in the first round. I still don't think if the Blackhawks had gone seven games or had really been competitive in that series, then I think you could take a step back and say, well, you know, we lost to the best team. That's just the way it goes. Considering how they lost, I don't think you can. I think it's just a very small salve on what's still going to be a gaping wound for these guys.
Yeah, I agree. If you can't justify the sweep, but if it was a six or seven game series, a lot of them were one goal games, you can just say, yeah, you know, they got the best of us. But and St. Louis and maybe Anaheim, if they end up losing the series, they could say they ran into a hot team, but the Blackhawks can't, because Nashville wasn't particularly hot coming into the regular season. They just looked like they wanted it more, and they obviously got through them in four games with ease.
Good stuff, Charlie. Tracy, same to you, and thanks for coming in to do the podcast. We'll see you next time.
Yep.
And our thanks to Scott Darling, who joined us, the newest member of the Carolina Hurricanes. And we want to remind you, you can't get enough of Chicago sports. Visit Chicago's own Vivid Seats to receive 10% off Blackhawks tickets and all other sports, music, and entertainment. Go to vividseats.com/C. TSN Shy. That's going to do it for the Hawks Talk podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.